It has been a long week, hasn't it? Can you even remember Monday? We talked about sex abuse cover-ups, painting over Atlanta's murals. We've covered a lot of ground, so as we do every Friday, let's take a breath. We have a group of smart people with us. We're going to kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
This is such a big moment. Say it with more gusto.
Let's break into the FBI.
As magnificent as you are, you are still no match for me.
We'll see about that.
That little rat-looking thing just got ate. Damn, nature, you're scary.
Come to Homer's BBBQ. The extra B is for BYOBB.
What's that extra B for?
That's a typo.
Joining us in the break room, Kalina Poehler, filmmaker and podcast producer, Stefan Turkheimer, lawyer and editor for Georgia Poll, Kathy Lohr, journalist, former NPR correspondent, and joining us all the way from Savannah, Jessica Szilagyi, writer and blogger. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
You made it to Friday.
Good morning.
Morning.
Let's talk politics. No one talks about that lately. Stacey Abrams is running for governor. Should she win? She scores a double first. First person of color, first female to take the state's highest office.
You can't tackle problems if you refuse to admit they exist. And there is a problem with how we think about the role of leadership for women of color. I see race and gender and class as markers. They let us tell ourselves stories about who we think people are. But then my job and the job of everyone in leadership is to move us past that conversation.
So let's try to set politics aside for just a moment. She is a Democrat, but let's just talk about, is the state ready to vote for not just a woman, but a woman of color? Yes?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Why not? This needed to happen some time ago. I want to see more people of color, period, running for offices across
regardless
the country.
Regardless of party.
Regardless. And I think this is going to really put people on the map. Whether or not she is likely to win is another story. But I am absolutely happy to see her running. This is amazing.
Yeah, I think I think even the larger story, though, is that there are two women in the Democratic primary. We're going to get a woman
right.
from it, regardless of what happens. And if we choose well, we'll probably win. I mean, that's what's so crazy right now. And we have a very good shot of having a woman governor. And it is just an amazing
How exciting.
Thing.
Jessica,
so
what do you think about this? Is the state ready to elect a woman?
I think the state is ready to elect a woman. I just think that it's still a little bit more acceptable in Metro Atlanta as compared to some of the far corners of our state. And that's a little bit disappointing, but I think these women don't exactly align with my ideology, but I think that they could really have an impact just on women in politics in general if they can get around the state and tell people what they're about.
Kathy?
I agree somewhat with Jessica because I don't believe Georgia is ready to elect a woman or an African-American woman as governor. I mean, this is, first of all, in 2017, only 75 women hold statewide elected offices nationwide.
Yeah, that's
very
true.
Small number. One governor, a female governor, since Nikki Haley is now gone and in the Trump administration. And I just think that Atlanta, Macon would probably support it, but I just think that Middle Georgia, South Georgia, I don't think they're ready.
Even if it were a Republican, I guess. Okay, let's move on to another woman from Augusta. This one, reality winner, and that is her real name. She has been charged with espionage. She allegedly gave classified material to an online news source.
Even if I thought that our printers killed baby seals, I would not be a whistleblower. The Bernards, for generations, have silenced whistleblowers. That's how we made all our money. Woody Guthrie wrote a song about us.
Supporters say she is a whistleblower and therefore protected. Critics say she's a traitor. What do you think?
I think the Whistleblower Act has no protection for classified data, so I don't know why people are calling her or suggesting that she's going to have some sort of legal defense here. I think the big thing is, though, it's like the Russians were trying to hack our voting elections and no one was going to tell us. Is that really what was going to happen? I mean, I think this is a woman who fought for our country, loves our country, and was upset about the direction of our country and did something. She's a young person, but I don't think
but
she
still
should... Yeah, yeah. It's classified information.
I mean, she's still illegal.
The Justice Department's going to handle this, but yeah.
I think it's a problem because also yesterday we learned more about the fact that she had a thumb drive, which is like a big no-no in any of the secure building. We don't know what other information she might have been.
Which is why they've denied her bail.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I think it's an important story, and I think people have the right to know if the election was hacked by Russia.
Which is a separate issue, right?
I know.
Jessica, what do you think here?
Well, I think that what she did is exactly what Edward Snowden did, and he wouldn't have left the country if he was protected. So I don't think she should expect any protections either.
Kalina?
I really thought her name was a joke. I thought they were
Wait,
selling.
That wasn't my question.
And that was not your question. It was not. I apologize, but I had to, it had to be said. Yeah. I mean, when I saw the her name come across my feed, I said, oh, they found somebody who won a reality competition is now, you know, charged with this. And then I had to like actually go in and said, oh,
she
that
did
is
the opposite of winning a reality competition.
Exactly. Yes. But that is how amazing is that headline, though.
Well, and I thought like someone stole my Twitter handle. That was
oh,
the
God.
Other thing.
Okay.
Right. But,
all right.
But it was serious, obviously. But yeah, I thought it was a joke.
All right. Plenty of people say Wonder Woman is an excellent role model for young women. A Slate article says different, written by a woman, this article. It says Wonder Woman is not feminist enough. It says Gal Gadot is too pretty, among other things. Several hundred million box office dollars says otherwise, of course.
And meanwhile, I'll take this for safekeeping.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
You gotta put the sword down, Diana, please.
It doesn't go with the outfit.
So what do we think? Is Wonder Woman a feminist icon or no?
Oh,
wait, no, no,
first?
The guy
okay.
can't go first.
Yeah, thank you.
Jessica, what do you think here?
I just don't understand how you're not feminist enough. I mean, you could be, you can have feminist views on certain issues, and that should just classify you in the group. I don't understand why you're not enough. I don't get that mentality.
I agree 100%. I mean, what does beauty or not having enough beauty or lack of beauty, what does that have to do with where you fall on the scale of feminism? That sounds crazy to me.
Yeah.
And I believe that it's really important for young boys and girls to learn that women can, they're smart and they're strong and they can save the world just as much as men superheroes.
Well, and also, I mean, as someone who's often accused of being too pretty, it hurts, you know, and people don't realize that it hurts on both sides of the spectrum.
Beyonce told us it hurts.
Well, yeah. Okay, yeah. So listen, the author's argument was that the movie focused too much on her sex appeal, right? There was too many people commenting constantly about how beautiful she was.
Wait, weren't Amazons in folklore, weren't they not just warriors, you know, and amazing women and female deities, but they were also striking
in scantily clad,
which I never
understood because there's so many mosquitoes in the Amazon.
So many.
I mean, it's like you really
need
to cover up.
They're immune from them. That's part of their superpower.
Oh, are you serious? Well, here's the thing. Is she fighting the patriarchy or is she fighting for the patriarchy? I'm going to leave you with that.
No, you're not, because I'm going to
Oh, my gosh.
Here's one quote from the article here, and just trying to play devil's advocate. Okay. It says, by the time the action got too fast, no spoilers, by the way, got too fast-paced and loud for any more characters to marvel at Diana's fine body and bone structure, I was an hour past being sick of the sexy lady is also hyper-competent joke. So the argument they're making really is that why does the first thing people care about with this woman who's carrying a sword that most people couldn't lift.
they want people to go to this movie. Okay, they had to make it's a blockbuster and it's directed
by a warrior.
And she's a warrior.
Character is a warrior character.
You have to entertain and teach.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Like,
I agree with you.
You gotta do both things. You gotta get people in.
And it's $103 million opening weekend.
Biggest for a female
standalone
director.
Standalone, yeah, movie.
Has,
right.
To be honest, how feminist, is it that a movie like this did so well and is still doing so well in the box office? It's doing well, not just because she's a pretty face, but people love Wonder Woman, period. Do you know what I mean? It seems very odd that this argument is coming out in that way to me.
Okay, well then, let's take it one step further, which is this a huge step forward then for feminism? There have been other female superheroes.
Of course.
This is the first one to get a major blockbuster.
Its own movie.
Yeah,
its own
motion picture release.
I think it's a step forward for women directors.
Oh, sure. Interesting.
Yeah, still for women behind the camera, period.
Yes, because they don't get the chances. They haven't been getting the chances in Hollywood. And this is a big step forward, I think.
Jessica, did you go see it?
I didn't, but I've read a lot about it, and I've been following this drama. But, you know, if the goal is to raise awareness about it and bring this all to the light, then why are we so worried about how we get there?
It's an interesting question. Colleen, did you go see it?
Of course I did.
And?
I want to see it again.
Grade?
I loved it. I'll give it a solid A.
Stefan?
It's a strong grade. I have not seen it, but this is the first of these type of movies, and by that I mean like the, comic book character movies. Sorry, I don't know if that's the proper term, that I've even considered seeing, and I will see it at some point. So, I mean, like, this one actually, yeah. I'm going to see it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. And Kathy, did
I'm
you see it?
I'm planning to go this weekend.
Well, I've seen it. I'm with Kalina. I'm going to give it an A, absolutely.
Nice. Yeah.
So, and I also want to mention that in all the movies like about Thor and stuff, they also drew all
right,
over.
Right, right. Oh, they drew all over the men as well.
Yeah,
right.
Right. So equally, equal amazing. Shared drooling. It is Friday. We are hanging out. I'm all for equality and drooling. We're in the break room. Just ahead, we're going to talk about what is up with men and why won't they go see the doctor? If you want to tweet, you know how to reach us. It's at OST Talk, or you can find us on Facebook as well. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room like we do every Friday. My guests today are Kalina Bowler, filmmaker, podcast producer, Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, Stefan Turkheimer, lawyer and editor for Georgia Poll, and from Savannah, Jessica Salaji, writer and blogger. And Jessica, are you having coffee?
I'm having tea, so I'm halfway there.
This is the moment when we thank the Savannah Coffee Roasters every week. They donate the coffee that we drink, although I think the Savannah Bureau also drinks Savannah Coffee Roasters, so it's all true. You can find them online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, State Rep Tommy Benton, Georgia State Rep, has been selected to serve on a committee that's focused on civics education for Georgia's kids. Benton has been quoted in the past saying that the KKK, quote, kind of made people straighten up, end quote.
And I understand that African Americans, for the most part, have a problem with the slavery issue, but they don't denounce their ancestors that were in Africa that were selling slaves. They find it offensive because they have not been taught a true history of the war.
He also attempted to force the state to observe Robert E. Lee's birthday and Confederate Memorial Day as official state holidays. So, do we think those opinions should disqualify him from serving on an education committee? That's an honest question.
I have two major issues. First is, does he walk around with that ominous music behind him at all times? Because
that
he
would
should,
be freaking awesome,
right? And second of all, like, no, he shouldn't have anything to do with education. You know, he's a middle school teacher. At least he was. He was retired. I mean, like, this guy does not. The problem with Tommy Benton, though, is that his district keeps electing him. We have to give him something to do.
Well, we're not asking if he should be a state rep. That's their choice, if they like him or not. The question is, should he serve on an education committee? What do you think, Jessica?
I want to say that he is a horrible representative of somebody who wants to preserve history or is even on that side of the issue. But if he's elected and he has a different opinion, he should still – that shouldn't disqualify him from offering his opinion. It just might be wrong.
In no way should he be on a committee to determine what school kids are taught. His opinions are opinions and not history, and they're not
fact. I was
fact.
Just about to say.
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, in addition to fighting efforts to remove the Confederate flag and about the holiday, he said that slavery was not the primary cause of the Civil War.
Which is historically factually
right.
incorrect.
He doesn't need to be teaching history. His current position at the legislature sees chair of the retirement committee, and I think he should be taking that one a little more seriously. Retirement, I mean.
Stefan, Kalina.
In a word, no.
Okay. next topic. There was a very long and very laudatory article in the New York Times about Cumberland Island. They were praising it as a fantastic getaway. Come on, it is. Culinary haven. Rooms, it's become so popular that rooms at Greyfield, the island's only inn, now cost $635 a night.
You have to work weekends for the rest of this month.
Done.
And you have to answer the phone when it rings.
Done.
And you have to oversee the nature hikers next week.
No.
You have to be in the lobby at 6 o'clock Friday morning. You have to hand out towels and water bottles. You have to show them the hiking trails. And you have to let them give you a nature name.
Fine. I will let them give me a nature name.
Okay, that's from the Gilmore Girls Inn. But what do we think about this? Does national attention, is that good or bad for an island that's fairly pristine and is mostly a national seashore?
I think it's actually good. And I know that's shocking to everyone, but I think the more exposure you can give to art, especially in print, of our national seashore and our various things that we need protection, it's more likely that when people try to erode those protections that someone will speak up, and it makes it easier to get people on board with protecting them.
Why especially in print?
Because then they don't actually go there and trample plants.
I see. I don't think, you know what, people have been fighting about Cumberland Island for decades.
The Spanish and
way before that. But I mean, this preservation issue has been going on. And the reason that the rooms are so high is because at the Grayfield is because there are so few there. So they can charge whatever they want.
It's a small
room. I've only seen it from a boat tour. It's beautiful, though.
Well, they also have like a fantastic chef. And
yes,
like
now they've.
I mean,
right.
There's like a lot. They get 3 meals a day.
Right,
I mean, you know,
right.
There's
right.
some stuff that's in there.
Three
that's...
meals a day. Jessica, you're closer to Cumber Island than we are. What do you think?
I agree with Stefan. I think that the more people who fall in love with it, the more likely they'll be to protect it. I mean, they'll stand up and fight for something when it comes time for that. So I think it'll be helpful.
I'm kind of weary of inviting and bringing more national attention to Cumberland Island, only because the more people that are interested, the more people will want to come. And just by, you know, the nature of people stepping foot on the island and working and moving and playing on the island, preservation becomes... You know, that much more important.
I do think we need quotas for New Yorkers, and I think that's where you're going.
Okay, on that note, let's talk about men. June is Men's Health Month, but most men probably don't care because 60% of them don't ever go to the doctor. Even more of them don't go when it's a problem of mental health, and male doctors are the most unlikely of all groups to actually seek treatment of any kind.
My God, I've never seen such a gruesome shark attack, especially this far inland.
It wasn't a shark. It was an awful, incompetent doctor.
Wow, he must have been a total Zoidberg.
So what is it with men and doctors? And I should say we got a tweet from a listener already, Amanda Beth, who says, I think the bigger question is why men are such babies when they get even the slightest sickness. Amanda, we're not going to go there, but we do have a token male with us.
Oh, great. Is it me? It's
yes,
me.
I'm kidding.
No.
But yes,
no.
You are the only male in the room.
Yes. Why don't I go to the doctor?
Why don't you go
to
the doctor?
You know, I kind of think if I ignore stuff, it'll go away. Is that not accurate medically? Anyway, that's kind of my plan. I don't know.
Would we get a different, because your wife is actually here with you today. Would we get a different answer from her?
Probably. We can bring her in. But I think that's not a good idea. No, I mean, I think like dudes really don't like getting naked in front of other dudes, despite all of their histories in high school. And I think that people just don't want to do it. And so they just go, am I going to go to the doctor in June? Do you think it's Men's Health Month? They're like, nope, treat it like every other month.
I don't think it's a June thing, but, you know, I think that men see themselves as caretakers, perhaps, of the family. So they don't look at themselves as, I need help. And I also think that if you don't know you're sick, then you don't have to face it.
Does your husband go to the doctor?
He does.
Oh.
But he didn't start doing it until in his 40s. And he said he finally realized, you know, I should probably have an annual physical.
I wonder if this
does
is...
Does he go in June?
No.
No.
I wonder if this is something... of a reverse effect of toxic masculinity that a lot of feminists like to throw around, because not only does it relate to how men relate to women when it comes to toxic masculinity, but how they relate to themselves and how they look at themselves. And you're right, Kathy, I think that a lot of them don't like to think of themselves as weak in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, oh, someone needs to take care of me or look after my health. And, you know, a lot of men are raised to believe, like, I'm the one
walk
who needs
off.
To be strong.
I am
biting my tongue about it.
Well, let's bring Jessica
sure.
in. Jessica, yeah. What do you think here?
Well, I agree. I have brothers, and they're all the same way. I think it's totally the shake it off mentality of, you know, this isn't going to take me down. So.
All right. So we have poor Stefan is very much outnumbered at this point. So we definitely need to hear from the men who are listening. Why don't you go to the doctor? You know how to reach us, @OST Talk on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. If you're just joining us, we're in the break room. We've got Jessica Szilagyi with us from Savannah, Kathy Lohr, Seven Turkheimer, and Kalina Bowler. So, all right. A less light subject. Bill Cosby's sexual assault trial started this week. He has pled not guilty on all charges. But clearly his image as America's dad has been damaged. Is it forever damaged? Will we ever enjoy the Cosby Show again?
we shouldn't be watching The Cosby Show now, regardless of the outcome of this trial. I think that enough people have come forward that we should, that the whole myth is busted. That is a show that was absolutely a outgrowth of his own personality. He's not like playing a character. He's basically playing himself. And nobody should be watching it. I was shocked when I saw it on television the other day. And if people want to go see those sweaters, everyone in Australia wears them. So go there.
I just think the affection is gone. The affection that was there for his half his life, most of his life. It's a betrayal. It's this, you know, we find out that he's admitted to giving quaaludes to women to have sex with them. It's how do you...
We still watch other movies and stuff made by people who have records of sexual impropriety.
I feel what's going on here in with The Cosby Show is people have attached emotionally not only to the show itself but to the character that that Cosby created, Dr. Huxtable, and his family and how he ran his family and how he, you know, related to the people in his family. They almost, when you attach such strong emotional ties, it's almost like a betrayal if this person outside the character, you know, could have been doing whatever.
Yeah.
But it was called The Cosby Show. I mean, it's purely an outgrowth of who he was. They called, I mean, it wasn't called The Huxtables. It was called The Cosby Show. It's his whole persona is wrapped up in that.
And he was also a big teacher. It was like, oh, this is right. How it's supposed to be. And
yeah. Jessica, you want to weigh
in
the
here? Happy marriage. And
Right. That's why it's so sad.
Yeah.
Jessica?
Jess has no opinions on The Cosby Show.
She's had enough.
Like, clearly.
She dropped off.
She's texting her brother, telling him to go to the doctor.
Right.
That's right. All right. Let's talk about college. Harvard rescinded invitations to at least 10 students who'd already celebrated acceptance letters. That's because officials discovered some very, very offensive memes that these students had posted on social media.
I found another tweet from a student at Sheldon's lecture. Dr. Cooper has taken a relatively boring subject and managed to make it completely insufferable.
All right. Is this a violation of free speech rights? And I should mention, you know, we played a funny tweet, but a clip there, but these were not funny. Or is this another example of people not understanding that you have to bear the consequences of free speech? Kathy Lohr is already nodding, our journalist in the room. What do you think here, Kathy?
I think it's absolutely fair for Harvard to disinvite these students who posted inappropriate, very inappropriate, mocking the Holocaust, mocking the deaths of kids. You know, I think people are going to understand that what they put online is not private, even though this was supposed to be a quote unquote private group for Harvard kids. And I mean, this is the same thing that's happening in all over the country. When people are looking for applicants for jobs, especially young applicants.
Jessica, what do you think here? Do people not understand that free speech has consequences, or what happened?
Well, it absolutely has consequences, and we're talking about an elite university here, and you're representing it. So the lack of understanding that this would have a negative effect is kind of discouraging for people who were accepted into Harvard.
And look, I attended Harvard, and I will tell you that there's no shortage of people like that there. So don't worry about these guys. They're not going to they're not missing out. I mean, they're not missing out. Harvard is not going to miss them. There are enough people to represent the points of view of people that are privileged and are not real cool with minorities, not real cool with people that are different. So don't worry about Harvard. They're going to be fine.
But you're okay with them disinviting?
Yeah. I mean, look, here's the thing. There is this thing that's going on in colleges, which is to sort of eliminate minority viewpoints. And that is something we have to look at. That said, I think we can lose these guys. We'll be fine. I'm not worried about them.
I think it's a smart move by Harvard, because people are now considering who institutions and corporations are associating themselves with. So if they have if there are students that are known that they're making these memes and they're making these offensive statements and they're bringing them in, having known that they were doing that in their high school years, this could look bad.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, so it's almost like...
It reflects poorly on the institution.
It's almost like quality control for them at this point, because now people are looking at, well, who does Harvard associate with after this
Stefan Turkheimer, apparently.
Well, yes.
But I think that it's also employers are looking at not just can the person do this job, but what kind of person are they? Because in the long term, they're, you know, when
same
they move
thing,
on
right.
from Harvard, they're, yes, exactly.
Same thing with employers, exactly.
But see, here's the thing, though. That has been a topic of debate. When someone has posted something that's offensive or in some cases racist and they've lost their job, there have often been protests that it was unfair for them to lose.
They lost that job. They can find another one. There are jobs out there that will hire people no matter what, as long as you can do the job. It depends on the corporation. The corporation, at least in the state of Georgia, they have the right to do
fire
that.
You.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, it depends on what kind of job they're in. If they're a public official and they're
exactly
and they're posting, yeah. Right. You know,
they're
I mean,
police
this
officer,
is
for instance.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
All right. So we have a final topic, and it's a bit of a lightning round. We're going to talk about something actually truly serious, and that's barbecue sauce.
Hell yeah.
It's 2 weeks away from the beginning of summer. It's already barbecue season.
On your face, you are.
Cat got your tongue, Andy? What is it?
You have barbecue sauce all over your face.
I know that. So?
It's pretty foul.
It's just barbecue sauce.
Plenty to like on St. Simon's Island, right? I mean, speaking of another island, it's our poshest barrier island. But Soul's Barbecue from St. Simon's won 5th place in a national competition for barbecue sauce. And here's the question. What makes good barbecue sauce? We're going to go here quick. Is it sweet? Is it spicy? Maybe it's rub and no spice at all. Jessica, go.
It doesn't matter what it is as long as it's not mustard-based.
Oh, okay.
That's true. Down with
Let's
South Carolina.
Let's talk about it.
All right.
Yeah.
Kalina?
I love a tomato-based St. Louis-style barbecue sauce.
Oh, that has a lot of sweetness in it.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay.
Yes.
Stefan?
Man, I am a traditionalist. We got to have the vinegar. Southern Soul has a great sauce. A lot of good sauces in Atlanta. I mean, that's where it's going to be.
I lived in Kansas City. Got to go with that Kansas City barbecue or dry rub. I love dry rub. Arthur Bryant's a little bit more gritty.
What distinguishes Kansas City barbecue
for you?
It's
sweet. It's sweet. Yeah. But there's also the vinegar. I mean, they have both. So I guess I would say I embrace barbecue.
So the one thing you all agree on is that South Carolina has bad barbecue sauce.
Yes. I don't understand them at all.
I mean, just keep your mustard on your hot dogs. We're not judging you.
All right. Fine enough. But we have to put this to our listeners as well. What's the best barbecue sauce? And maybe it's a restaurant that has it, like Soul's Barbecue on St. Simon's. Is it sweet? Is it spicy? Or maybe a rub? Maybe it's a rub. And I mean, look, barbecue is serious business.
You know, a rub with, for me, is a St. Louis style. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I'm thinking about it now. I'm getting barbecue for lunch. Thank you.
You're welcome. what kind of barbecue is what does that go? What kind of meat is it best on?
For me, I love the really, really big spare ribs.
The pork ribs, right?
Yeah, the pork ribs, yeah. Yes. Mm. And community barbecue here.
Community
in
Q.
Oh, my God.
Good stuff.
Ooh.
We've got really good barbecue in Atlanta.
Yes,
didn't
we
always,
do.
It wasn't always the case, and now it absolutely is true.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, what kind of barbecue do you... I mean, if you're going to have barbecue, what kind of meat do you choose?
I'm going to lean towards chicken.
Oh, she's going healthy.
Okay.
Good for you, Jess.
Thanks, Stefan.
If you could see his expression. Not buying it. Okay, definitely you can give us your opinion on that. You know how to reach us. Leave a message at 404-500-9457. You can also find us on Facebook, and we are on the Twitter. It's at OST Talk for the show and at Celeste Headley for me. We're out of time. I want to say thank you to all of my guests. From Savannah, Jessica Szilagyi, writer and blogger there. Kathy Lohr is a journalist and former NPR correspondent. And Stefan Turkheimer, lawyer and editor for Georgia Poll. Also Kalina Bowler, filmmaker and podcast producer. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
For today and the week, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.